Well, LSU baseball escaped their weekend series against Georgia with a series win. The second best team in the SEC East. What exactly went right for LSU this weekend? And then there was a big weekend for a different LSU sport. The NFL draft happened this weekend and 10 LSU Tigers went off the board throughout the seven rounds. Who went where and what exactly are those teams getting in the LSU Tigers that they drafted? All of that and more on today's edition of Locked On LSU.
You are Locked On LSU, your daily podcast on the LSU Tigers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Well, thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. We're free and available wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iTunes. You can check us out there if you want to listen to the podcast, but you can also watch the podcast as well. So make sure to check out Locked On LSU on YouTube. Give us a subscribe. Just press that subscribe button and you'll get notified as soon as the episodes drop. So you won't miss a second of Locked On LSU content. My name is Caroline Fenton and I'm your host, as I am every day. I graduated from LSU in 2019. I'm a diehard LSU fan and I am now in Nashville, Tennessee, hosting a sports talk radio show on ESPN 102.5. The Gabe, you can follow me on Twitter at Caroline Fenton 1. You can also follow along the podcast at Locked On LSU. But a jam-packed weekend, both at LSU Sports and in Louisiana social events. I saw the videos and the clips of Garth Brooks at Tiger Stadium this weekend. If you went, I am so incredibly jealous. I watched the videos of Colin Baton Rouge. I saw that it was registered as an earthquake, and it really gave me chills, even just watching it, you know, on a screen through my phone, watching the video. I felt the intensity, I felt the energy, and I felt just, you know, the love for LSU coming through that video. So I really am very envious of whoever was able to go to that concert. Also, Jazz Fest this past weekend, the NFL draft, LSU wins a series against Georgia. I mean, just a jam-packed freaking weekend for us LSU fans. But I want to touch on LSU getting a series win against Georgia, getting two out of the three at home this weekend against the second-best team in the SEC East. Of course, Tennessee dominating that side of the conference, but Georgia has been hanging tough in the SEC East, and I thought this was going to be a big battle test for LSU, and it absolutely was. But the biggest thing that I noticed that was both their strength and their weakness this past weekend was actually two of them, offense and pitching. Because on Friday night, Mikhail Hilliard was absolutely lights out. LSU won that game on Friday night 6-2. Mikhail Hilliard was in for six innings, 113 pitches. Throughout the season, I've seen Mikhail Hilliard just improve his longevity so much. I look at this Friday night start against Georgia and that night one Thursday night start against Missouri. Those were two of Mikhail Hilliard's best outings of the season for certain, potentially of his career. But he pitched six innings, had seven strikeouts, walked only three, and gave up two runs. It was a two-run homer. But I thought Mikhail Hilliard being able to stay out that long and kind of allow the LSU bullpen to do what it needed to do and save more arms for the rest of the series, I thought was huge. Mikhail Hilliard continues to improve, and he absolutely showed that on Friday night. But I said, you know, being able to preserve some of those arms, which is exactly what they needed to do in that Saturday game. That was a 12-7 loss on Saturday. Now, there's one good and one very bad thing about that game on Saturday. So Georgia pitcher Jonathan Cannon, who is emerging as the best pitcher in college baseball, certainly up there in the conference as well. I mean, he has 53 strikeouts and only three walks on the season. I mean, this guy is absolutely lights out. He came back from injury and he pitched a perfect game. Not an entire game. I believe it was four or five innings maybe against Alabama the week before. So, I mean, Jonathan Cannon has been, you know, an incredible pitcher for Georgia. So I looked at that knowing that LSU is such an offensive heavy team, that this team's greatest strength lies in offense. So I was a little bit concerned about how they were going to be able to fare against Jonathan Cannon. And they fared very well. I mean, seven runs on the game. This team hit really well against Jonathan Cannon. But what was the problem there was the pitching. Blake Money with a less than impressive outing as a starter on Saturday night. Went two innings, gave up three runs. I mean, LSU blew through seven pitchers, and all but one gave up at least a run, if not more. And you're looking at Riley Cooper was the only one who didn't give up a run, but he was only in for two outs. He gave up two hits, no runs, but was in there for two outs. You look at Blake Money, who, like I said, only went two innings, gave up three runs. Jacob Hasty came in for three innings with only one run, so a pretty solid outing for him. Bryce Collins only pitched one out, gave up two runs. Riley Cooper, like I said, didn't give up a run, but gave up two hits in his short outing. Trent Vintmeyer, Eric Reiselman, Garrett Edwards, they were all in for about an inning, and they each gave up two runs. So that was the problem on Saturday. Offense going into that game was what I was concerned about, going up against such elite pitching. But really, they hit very well. I was very impressed about how they were able to get the bat on the ball against Jonathan Cannon, but the pitching, just they couldn't stop those Georgia bats. The pitching was less than impressive. And I think the short start from Blake Money just kind of, you know, it was a bad omen for what the rest of the game held on the mound. So not a great outing on the mound for LSU on Saturday, dropping that game to Georgia 12-7. And then coming in on Sunday with the rubber match, Sam Dutton out on the mound, his longest start so far as an LSU Tiger, went 4 2/3. Like I said, his longest start, who had four strikeouts, walked no batters, great sign there, gave up two runs there. But I was really impressed by what I saw from Sam Dutton, and Jay Johnson was as well. This is what Jay Johnson had to say about Sam Dutton after the series win and the game win on Sunday.
JD is going to be a superstar. He is a superstar. I watched a ton of the two games that we played last night, and I was back and forth with Coach Kelly. I was very confident that he was the best guy to mix and get them out of those home run swings that they got so many of yesterday. And so if you want to be a starting pitcher, you have to be able to throw three pitches for strikes, okay? And you have to have a little bit of toughness in what you do. He has both of those things. But if you go to that start and then you go back to his start at Arkansas, outside of McHale, those are our two best starts in SEC play. And so we look forward to more good ones. We won the game today. You know, obviously the three homers are nice and those are special performances by those guys. But because Sam basically took the mound and showed us he was going to keep them right where they needed to be.
Sammy D, you heard Jay Johnson there saying, you know, some of the best outings from some of their pitchers so far this year have been Mikhail Hilliard, their ace on Friday nights, and then also Sam Dutton in the few starts he had. He had to start against Missouri this past weekend, not the weekend before the Georgia series. Huge upside and seeing a lot of promise for Sam Dutton, so love to see that. But of course, kind of buried the lead here in the three home runs on Sunday. Of course, Dylan Cruz hitting two dingers on Sunday, and Cade Doty walking it off to win the game on Sunday 4-3. Such an awesome game, such an awesome way to end it. LSU now back-to-back weekends walking it off to win series against Missouri and then against Georgia this week as well. So, I mean, makes you bite your fingernails a little bit, but I think that, you know, LSU proving that, like, they can continue to do it with their bats. They can continue to win games with their bats. We're kind of looking at a macro picture of the standings and of the SEC. LSU currently sits at 12-9, and they are neck and neck right there with Georgia, with Auburn, with A&M, all with 12-9 on the season. So, I mean, a pretty tight race there, especially in the SEC West with Auburn, A&M, and then you got Alabama knocking on the door as well. LSU taking on Alabama this upcoming weekend. So that's a huge series in order to kind of keep their heads above water in this super competitive SEC West. So of course, with Arkansas at the top of the SEC West standing at number one. But LSU moved in the RPI rankings from 22 to 16, in the collegiate baseball rankings from 27 to 23, and now sits at number 19 in the USA Today coaches poll. So, I mean, a really big series. And I don't like saying that, you know, that was a big win when it really wasn't, or, you know, it didn't have big implications, but Georgia's a really talented team that's been able to get big time wins throughout this season so far. So I think that LSU getting a series win here has been huge. Like I said, just to stay neck and neck and kind of in line with the rest of the SEC West, the more games that they can pick up, the better. I mean, like, no more losing these series or, you know, dropping games that they weren't necessarily supposed to drop. I don't like seeing a Saturday loss whenever you're able to put seven runs up against a really, really good pitcher. But Georgia's just that kind of team that if you throw them the right pitches, they're going to be able to score runs on you. So even though, you know, Saturday aside, a series win is huge. Moving forward, Nichols on Tuesday night and Bama on the road this upcoming weekend. But big series win for LSU this past weekend. But coming up next, also a really big weekend for some other LSU Tigers who were drafted in the NFL draft this past weekend. One guy on day one in round one, a couple guys on day two, a couple guys in day three as well. So I will fill you in on exactly where we can expect to see our LSU Tigers in the future. But before we get into that, I want to tell you about Built Bar, because summer is coming and you're going to be on the go. You're going to be on vacations. You're going to be on road trips. And you also want to be looking good in your swimsuits and your shorts and your cute little summer dresses. And Built Bars are not only super convenient, you know, you can throw them in your purse, take them with you on the go on your vacations, and, you know, throw them in your kids' backpacks, throw them in your lunchbox. But they also are really good for you. They're healthy and delicious, so you don't have to sacrifice delicious food for your health. All Built Bars are covered in 100% real chocolate, so that means you can kind of indulge in Built Bars just like you could with your desserts, but you're also eating healthy and you enjoy doing it. The Puffs are a really great alternative if you don't want the kind of standard protein bar like the Built Bar. Puffs are delicious. They're the first ever protein-infused marshmallow. You've got delicious flavors like churro and banana cream pie. They're only 140 calories, and they're delicious, so you get the best of both worlds there. Built Bar, there's a little bit of something for everyone, whether that's taste, whether that's health. They've got whatever your health needs are. Plus, they only contain like 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, only 4 net carbs, and 17 grams of protein. And compare that to your typical candy bar with a bunch of calories, more than 30 grams of sugar, dozens of net carbs. Ditch your candy bar and replace them with a Built Bar. So go to Built.com and get all your favorites. They've got banana cream pie, raspberry, double chocolate, cherry barcia, which is one of my favorites. They're all delicious, and new flavors are coming out all the time. So check them out at Built.com. So go to Built.com, use promo code LOCKED15 and get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. Well, thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. We are free and available wherever you get your podcasts. We're also on YouTube as well, so make sure to press that subscribe button whenever you check out the Locked On LSU YouTube page. But the NFL draft wrapped up on Saturday. We had the first round on Thursday, rounds 2 and 3 on Friday, and the remaining rounds on Saturday as well. And we saw LSU Tigers go throughout all 10 days, LSU actually ending the day with 10 players picked, the second most players drafted from any school, second only to Georgia, the reigning, you know, defending national champions. They had 15 taken. So, I mean, a really huge testament to this LSU team. I mean, now the total from that 2019 national championship team of players who got drafted, 30 players have gotten drafted from that 2019 team, 7 of those players in the first round. Between 2020 and 2022, of course, you had the 5 in the 2020 draft: Joe Burrow, Justin Jefferson, Patrick Queen, Kalavon Chaisson, and I'm forgetting one. One of you will jog my memory. And then last year, Ja'Marr Chase, and this year, Derek Stingley Jr. But just to kind of give a recap of what went on this past weekend, where can we expect to see these LSU Tigers playing on Sunday in the 2022 season? Of course, round 1, pick 3, Derek Stingley Jr. I have a full breakdown of Derek Stingley Jr.'s game and what exactly his role can be in Houston. So you can check that out both on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. You can check it out on YouTube as well. But essentially, the Houston Texans are rebuilding, and they're looking for, like, good foundational pieces for this rebuilding team. Derek Stingley Jr. is going into, you know, a defensive coach team, and Lovie Smith, he is also the defensive play caller. So kind of having that leadership on the team, very defensive focused, I think is going to be huge for Derek Stingley and huge as this team continues to build on its youth movement they're kind of moving into moving forward. So you can find that full breakdown of Derek Stingley on Friday's episode. Round 2, With the 59th pick in the 2022 NFL draft, the Vikings selected Ed Ingram, a guard, of course, out of LSU. So, I mean, of course, there are those off-the-field concerns, you know, flashback to 2018 when Ed Ingram was facing aggravated sexual assault charges. Of course, those charges were dropped the following year. He was reinstated into the team. I don't know if that was necessarily a reason why you weren't seeing, you know, Ed Ingram taken a little bit earlier. Guard just isn't the most premier position in the NFL. You know, if you're looking at your first offensive lineman taken, they're all either like badass guards or they're tackles or kind of swing tackles, guys that you can fill in different areas throughout the offensive line. But I mean, I think the Vikings are getting a wonderful addition in Ed Ingram because he can play either side. He can play right guard, he can play left guard, and he can compete for a starting spot right now. I mean, the Vikings have a open guard spot on their line. I fully expect the Vikings to be able to bring Ed Ingram in and groom him and want him to compete for that starting spot, which is a spot that I think that he could start to fill in pretty soon. So Ed Ingram taken, second player taken from LSU in the second round with a 59th pick. Cordell Flott taken in the third round with the 81st overall pick to the New York Giants. The good thing about Cordell Flott is he's incredibly versatile. He can play inside corner, he can play outside corner, he can play that slot kind of role. In the defensive backfield, and the Giants are just starving for members of their secondary. They're incredibly short in secondary. Like James Bradbury, you look at Dory Jackson, two certified NFL veterans who are currently sitting in that starting cornerback spot. So I could see Cordell Flott absolutely coming in and competing for a starting corner spot just because he is so versatile, just because he can play wherever you need him to play at the corner position, either inside in that slot position or outside. And also, the Giants just need bodies there. So that adds really great depth at the cornerback position. A little bit later on in the third round, the 93rd pick, the 49ers selected Ty Davis-Price, which was a little bit of a shock to me, to be completely honest. The 49ers aren't necessarily short on the running back position. Running back isn't as premier of a position. It's not as sexy of a position in the NFL anymore. So I honestly expected Tyrion Davis-Price to go more of like a day three guy. But I mean, the 49ers are getting a great pickup in Tyrion Davis-Price because although he's not, you know, your prototypical pass catching running back, he's a really big body and also very light on his feet. You don't see that a lot with running backs of that size. He's incredibly light on his feet. He's a very powerful physical back, really strong runner. And I think that the San Francisco 49ers are looking at Deebo Samuel. And Deebo, obviously a wide receiver, but also used in that running back role as well. You know, kind of called a wide back, so to say, for the 49ers. That's how Kyle Shanahan liked to use Deebo Samuel. And Deebo is not very happy in San Francisco right now. He doesn't like the way he's being used. So either he doesn't want to play that running back role anymore, and the 49ers are looking to more depth at the running back position just so they can alleviate that running burden off of Deebo. Or they're looking at trading Deebo Samuel, which is what he requested from the 49ers. So, you know, maybe they're looking at that they would have an opening kind of spot at the run first position. So, you know, Deebo Samuel's position with San Francisco, he could be there, he could not be, but I think Tyrion Davis-Price, I think they may be looking at him as a physical back, as a running back that, you know, could come in and contribute immediately. Kyle Shanahan is kind of an offensive genius, so I look at San Francisco that they have a plan of some sort for Tyrion Davis-Price in order to take him in the third round. That's still pretty premier real estate, taking a player in the third round. You still expect that player to be able to contribute in some way. So Tyrion Davis-Price taking 93rd overall to the 49ers. I think they have a plan for him, and I think it involves Deebo Samuel in some way. But I guess, you know, Sundays in the fall, we will come to see. Kay York, kicker, taken in the fourth round, 124th pick overall to the Cleveland Browns. So in 2021, Cleveland had the league worst field goal percentage. They made not even 73% of their field goals in 2021. I mean, they just need some sort of reliable person there that can just kick the ball through the uprights, get us a few points. And as we've learned from Evan McPherson with the Cincinnati Bengals, that's a really important thing to be able to rely on your kicker to make those 3 points if you're in a tough position offensively, I think is invaluable. So the Browns look at Cade York, who is arguably one of the best kickers in college football this past year. They look at their kicking woes this past year and say, this is a guy that can fill in, that can kick field goals for us right away. And, I mean, he can make them from far. I mean, he made several 50-plus yard field goals throughout his career at LSU. So Cade York is going to be a great fit in Cleveland, a team that needs kicking talent, and Cade York, a very talented kicker. Neil Farrell, defensive tackle, taken in the fourth round, 126th pick overall to the Las Vegas Raiders. Now, the Raiders are entering this new era. They have a new coaching staff. You look at Josh McDaniels taking over the head coaching job over there in Vegas. They have a new defensive coordinator and Patrick Graham, and they have a need at the defensive line. Their nose tackle, Jonathan Hankins, is kind of their constant. He's a veteran guy. He just got re-upped on his contract in Vegas, so he will kind of play that center anchor role in the defensive line. But I think that Neil Farrell has the ability to compete right away for a defensive line position. It's not an incredibly deep position that the Vegas Raiders have right now. And I think also Patrick Graham coming in, bringing in his defensive scheme, he may want to try out different kind of edge rushers, kind of pass rushers, and see how Neil Farrell kind of fits into that role there. So Neil Farrell going to the Raiders, I think it'll be really interesting to see what this new coaching staff is able to do in a really competitive division. Damone Clark, taken 176th overall in the fifth round to the Dallas Cowboys. You know, this is a difficult one because, albeit Damone Clark, you know, led the SEC in tackles this past year, it was that herniated disc and the spinal fusion surgery that he had in the offseason that really kind of turned teams away. But the Cowboys are a team that traditionally isn't afraid of taking injury risks. And taking Damone Clark in the fifth round is really high reward with really low risk. Taking a guy in the fifth round, you know, if Damone Clark isn't able to come back right away, which I can't imagine that he would be, it's going to take some time. It's going to take some rehab. If he's able to come back and contribute, then great. Then the Cowboys got a reliable starter in the fifth round. And if he's not able to come back, if he's not able to contribute, then it was a fifth round pick and no harm, no foul. So I look at this with the Cowboys. They probably looked at Damone Clark. They looked at his upside in the fifth round and the risk that they were willing to take. And then you look at the later round, Dallas offensive tackle taken to the Texans in the sixth round. Jason Hines, guard, taken 210th overall to New England. And also Andre Anthony taken in that final round in the seventh with a 248th pick to Tampa Bay. I look at those three guys. Those are really talented players. I think those teams looked at those guys as kind of depth pieces that were able to, you know, just kind of come into camp, able to compete. If it works out, great, then those are late round guys. If it doesn't, no harm, no foul. Again, I mean, Jason Hines, you look at him, a guard, 6'2", 327 pounds. Like, that is NFL size offensive lineman there. So I'll be interested to see, you know, what these kind of later round guys are willing to do. But again, 10 players from LSU taken in the 2022 draft, second most from any team. Most important thing is it was 10 more than Texas. So, hey, I'll take that. Horns down. But coming up next, what exactly does that mean for this team this year? What does it mean for this LSU coaching staff? I'll get into that coming up next. But before I do that, I want to tell you about Bet Online. It is your number one source for all of your sports betting stats and information. You can find all the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including this year's basketball playoffs and the start of the Major League Baseball season. It's your continued source for all of your sporting wagering information. They've got live betting, they've got playoffs, they've got esports, and more. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. Bet Online, where the game starts. So, I mean, 30 players from that 2019 championship season have been taken from the 2020 through the 2022 drafts. That's outstanding. And I think that's just such a huge testament to just how good that 2019 team was. But what does that mean for the future necessarily? Because, albeit Brian Kelly didn't coach any of those players, he didn't coach in any of those games that got LSU to the national championship, Brian Kelly wasn't even a thought in our minds throughout these, you know, these past few drafts. He didn't develop these players. But I do think that this places some sort of pressure on Brian Kelly moving forward. Because those are 30 players taken in the past three drafts. Those are 30 players that you have to replace. And that's a precedent that's already been set by what this LSU Tigers team can do. Of course, we all know exactly what went right in that 2019 team. The stars just aligned. You know, it almost felt like an island of misfit toys that just came together so perfectly. You look at Joe Burrow, a guy who couldn't get a starting role at Ohio State. You look at Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who everyone said was too small to be to perform at that high level as a running back. You look at Justin Jefferson, a two-star recruit coming out of high school that blossomed at LSU and ended up becoming the offensive rookie of the year in his first season in the league. So there are now high, very, very high expectations for this LSU football team. So what this past draft tells me, what these past three drafts have shown me, is that Brian Kelly has some work to do. Because I don't think LSU, I know I don't have these expectations, and I don't think that you do either. I don't think that LSU fans have the expectation that we win national championships once in a blue moon. We don't have the expectation that LSU is going to be relevant nationally once every 5 to 10 years. We, as fans, have the expectation that LSU is going to be nationally relevant year in and year out. I think that we all know we've gotten the taste of that championship, and we know kind of the fallout over the past couple of years, and we don't want that. We don't want to be a team that's one and done, irrelevant for the following 2 years, and, you know, just trying to scratch and claw their way back to national relevance. This, to me, places a lot of pressure on Brian Kelly, not only to fill those spots left by players who are obviously NFL caliber players, but also to replace them with players that are just as good, if not better, as the barren spots that have been left. It's not just let's get bodies in there, it's let's get really quality players that will play on Sundays. Because although Brian Kelly's job is incredibly difficult, looking at, you know, just how good these players were and how much success LSU has been able to find with them, it also makes his job just a little bit easier in terms of recruiting. Because if I'm a player coming out of high school, what's my number one goal? Is to play on Sundays. Because I want to eventually go to the NFL. I want to make millions and millions of dollars playing the game that I love. So Brian Kelly can also look at that and say, look, 30 players in the past 3 years have been drafted from one single team. When you come to LSU, you play on Sundays. When you come to LSU, NFL teams notice you. And when you come to LSU, general managers and coaches in the NFL, owners in the NFL look at you and say, I know that you're coming from a good background. I know that you're coming from a team that has been battle tested from NFL caliber players, you know, week in and week out. You know, you look at, you said Derek Stingley Jr. That was kind of why I thought he was a better cornerback than Sauce Gardner, was just because of the caliber of talent, the wide receivers that he was going up against week in and week out in the SEC is so much more difficult because those SEC wide receivers he's going up against are now SEC, or excuse me, are wide receivers in the NFL. So I kind of look at it with two sides here that while these drafts put a lot of pressure, not just on Brian Kelly, but on these teams as a whole, to continue to pump out these types of players, this level of talent of players in the next few years, but it's also making his job a lot easier and being able to kind of hang your hat on the fact that NFLSU is a very, very real title. So while the pressure is on and while the pressure is real, I mean, just the continued excellence of LSU players coming into the NFL, I think is huge. And I think I look at 10 players, the second most players drafted out of one school this year, second only behind the reigning national champions, is a testament to the fact that even when LSU had a down year this past year, they're still getting noticed nationally. But that is going to do it for me today. Coming up on tomorrow's episode, we'll do a little bit more of a recap of maybe some storylines that don't necessarily affect LSU directly, but I think will be interesting to you LSU fans, and also some spring football updates as well. We'll get into that coming up tomorrow. But I appreciate you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. Now make your second listen Locked On SEC. Get all of your daily SEC news in less than 30 minutes with SEC expert Chris Gordy. It's free and available wherever you get your podcasts.